that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Are you ready to muster? Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. So happy to be with you today. And we are going to talk about, you know, Season 7, which is the free mustache rides from Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And it's great because Tom Selleck is our free mustache this time in our Ramblin' Man movie. And so to talk about Ramblin' Man, I am joined by Jim.
Stan, are we ready to get to scoring?
Well, you know, I mean, probably soon. All right, Jack. I hear you, Jack.
Oh, my God. Do you guys know anything about country music?
Yes.
You betcha.
We've been to the Grand Ole Opry, so... So, yeah,
I learned it all from this movie.
Yeah.
All right. Nick is here.
We almost went to Roy Acuff's house.
That's right.
In this movie, we almost went to his house, and they're like, it's $20 to go to the house. And we're like, well, fuck that.
But now I want to go to Roy Acuff's house even more. So, we know all of us are here. Now,
Nick is here. Greetings and salutations. I would like to congratulate you on Stan, because that is the first opening you've really fucked up.
Yeah. That was just the one, everything was a train wreck.
That is the flattest opening we've ever had. Normally you rock that sucker.
Well, see, I was trying to bring it down because I got in my own head as I was doing it, and I was thinking, oh, man. Last time Nick was giving me shit for going
some
too hot.
You suffer from anxiety when they were performance anxiety. It's understandable.
Happens to every guy at some time, Stan.
All right. Well, I'll do better because next episode, of course, is our last episode of this season. So I'll bring it then.
Much like the star, our star mustache in that movie, who really brings it.
Gonna bring it. All right. Well, for Ramblin' Man, Chapter 1, Boogaloo on Parade. Nick, please give us the summary.
Well, we got a couple good old boys who, are sort of forced out of town, whatever town they're in, and they end up in Nashville. And through a series of mistaken identities, they end up posing as detectives trying to solve a murder. Along the way, they meet country and western stars of all varieties and get their autographs. If this does not sound appealing so far, I wouldn't watch it.
Because
that's what it is.
Does this sound awesome? It doesn't? Okay, yeah, I get that. Yeah, fair cop.
But it has Tom Selleck in, Jerry Reed.
It does. What TV show did it remind you of? Like, this felt like... I was going to go Simon and Simon. What do you...
Mm. Oh, God. There's some Simon and Simon. There's definitely... I mean, I think you have to say there is some Dukes of Hazzard in there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the early moment. The bear.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bear, or in the Smokey and the Baron,
BJ and the Bear?
Bandit, BJ and the Bear, Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah,
maybe it is Smokey and the Bear. I mean, obviously Jerry Reed being in there helps that. It's just and it did go on to be a seven, you know, not with Tom Selleck in it, because he unfortunately was, they recast the role, and he found out after it was on air, they had recast the role. With I think it was Jeffrey Scott or something. What's the name of the? Yeah, Jeffrey Scott, who also has got pretty fantastic mustache. But yeah, it was recast and it lasted seven episodes. But he was pretty pissed, and then he got Magnum PI.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the really interesting thing about this is that Tom Selleck. I mean, he's listed as like the first name on the box kind of thing, because of course he's Tom Selleck. Now he's Tom Selleck, but I guess way back then. You know, really, when you watch this, he was totally the second banana.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think he had had, a couple seasons as on the Rockford Files. It's kind of like this knave character, you know. And I don't know how much else he had. His career wasn't exactly, he hadn't taken off yet.
No, because so it was still.
This was indeed a TV movie. Because you guys informed me of that last week, and after watching it, I did not, I thought it felt actually had some production value to it.
Well, yeah, pilots usually got better, yeah.
Yeah, it's a backdoor pilot, right?
Yeah, pilots usually got a bit more so that they could package them just as a standalone movie. There's tons of examples of that. Captain America. We saw Captain America, which is exactly the same thing.
I thought the one car that exploded would look more expensive than it perhaps was.
That I did note that explosion was maybe they like, and it's very possible that explosion was used in like eight different shows to kind of prorate.
Yeah.
I also thought that was pretty good production value for a pilot.
Yeah, this movie is it's pretty much every single little coincidence element that you could possibly throw into a movie and have it actually be more or less successful. I did enjoy watching it a great deal because I mean Jerry Reed is awesome.
Yeah, I actually finished the movie and my first thought was, that Jerry Reed, he should have done more shit. Then I remembered all the shit I've seen him in. He was in a lot of shit, man.
Mm.
And I think the reason he didn't ever become like a huge like television and movie star was that he only did this one role in every movie he's ever done.
Yeah, he's the driving guy. He's good at that role.
we got to get the Snowball Express.
Most of the enjoyment from this movie does come from the characters are likable and the chemistry between the two was good.
Yep.
Because everything else is really boring.
Oh, because the mystery makes so much sense.
Oh my God, that mystery. So great.
Oh my God.
Like, I couldn't explain it to you at all.
Okay,
no, so I noticed they're not trying.
So they're hired by this woman whose sister is missing. So they're hired by Morgan Fairchild in a wig to find Morgan Fairchild in a wig's sister
without a wig.
Who's Morgan Fairchild without a wig? And honest to God, I think this plot they search all over the city, they're trying to get, like, someone's trying to kill them because they've got this package that they picked up for a stranger, which, you know, apparently in the 70s was still okay. That's why they give you warnings not to do it now. and then they find out that Morgan Fairchild in a wig is the girl that's missing. She's trying to, like, it's a whole project here to fake her own death, basically. Which I'm sure worked way better when we didn't all know who Morgan Fairchild was.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
If you could see Morgan Fairchild the wing go, hey, why is Morgan Fairchild wearing a wig? And instead of like...
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Instead of being surprised by the twist ending at the end where they pull off her wig and it's like, you know, it's the same girl all the time.
Oh my God, it's Morgan Fairchild.
No, but that's how little this movie grabbed me. It wasn't until they pulled off the wig that I went, hey, that's Morgan Fairchild.
Really?
I had no idea.
Watch it on a phone, maybe. You should use a tablet-sized screen for these kinds of things.
No, I watched it on my 55-inch.
God, I watched it on my phone, and I still got it immediately.
I love that. I love that the third act of this, as they're laying, as you know, it's a TV mystery, so like the third act is all just explaining what happened in the first act, basically.
Boy, is it ever.
But they use that soft focus flashback thing that Murder, She Wrote used so much.
God. Every time they went, you could hear the music before they went to the flashback. So every time you went, oh, no, not again, because you knew it was coming. It's the music cue. And then all of a sudden it fades to the Vaseline on the camera effect, which is just wonderful. And they did it like 47 times.
I love that the fancy car they have has an actual car phone.
There wasn't there like two phones or two cars that had phones in there?
Two different cars.
It's just like, hold on, we got to go out to my car. Why? Why do you have to go out to the car? And then he picks up the phone and it's just like, okay. Fair enough then. Like, it was, I get why they needed that really fancy Excalibur car in there. But it's like, talk about an amazing moment where it's just like, Jerry Reed goes in and explains why he needs to borrow an Excalibur car for a weekend, but can't actually give them any money for it or anything like that.
Or show even a driver's license. Yeah.
That's one of those perfect moments that really, to me, describes this show. It just down to a microcosm where it's just
lay out the whole thing, Stan. How does Jerry Reed get this car?
Well, so he goes in there and he talks about his boss, Will Eubanks, who is thinking of buying all of these cars for his kids. Like, every one of his kids, I think it was, five kids? And then one more. And so he's like, but, you know, he needs to know, you know, I got to be able to tell him that this car works and is really good and is exactly what he wants. So I got to be able to drive it. And so the salesman is like, oh, but it's the weekend, so no banks are open. And so Jerry's like, oh, no banks are open. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we're good for it. So you give me this car for the weekend, and then I'll come back in on Monday, and we will sign the papers, and six of them are out the door. And then the next thing you know, he's driving the car. And it's just like, man, does that actually work? Because boy, oh boy.
Well, I do like his buddy's response when he gets the cards. You know, if you had a toothpick, you'd end up with a lumberyard. I thought that was a great
line. Yeah. I was trying to remember what the line was.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they needed this car so that they could fake their way into Woody Stone, who is the biggest country music star there is, played by Claude Akins. And so they needed it to fake their way into his house so that they could talk to him about the mystery. And I mean, from that point on, it completely breaks, because it's just like, Claude Akins is like, oh yeah, well, and nobody would actually do that, so I knew that you obviously were just fakers, but hey, anybody who had the balls to do that kind of thing is like, I'm going to talk to him anyways.
Yeah, I love the fact he's the bad guy. I think, by the way, just to keep the story understood for the listeners at this point, we need to let them know that Morgan Fairchild is an aspiring country music singer and a hooker.
it's true. And you know, an aspiring country music singer that, depending on who you listen to, either A, has talent, or B, really doesn't have any talent.
Yeah, one or the other. It's either you're good at singing or you're not good at singing. One of those two. Yeah.
She didn't seem good at singing to me, so I would be on the lack of talent side. But if she was a hooker, then that would make her like a lot of musicians. So really, I mean, totally fair.
She sings like one. She's singing. Okay, so she is the linchpin of the entire plot, and her music talent is one of the keys to the whole plot. She sings like one verse of a song in the entire film, and we get a 3-minute entirety of a Ray Stevens song in the middle of this movie.
But the Ray Stevens song was way better.
It was way better, but I wrote down this movie as screech to a halt.
I did appreciate Tom Selleck playing dumb on all the country music stars so Jerry Reed could explain them, thus explaining to an audience who the hell these people are. Because I'm pretty sure nobody in this movie was anybody by the time this movie was being made.
Barbara Mandrell would have been big at that point, wouldn't she?
I think maybe Ray Stevens might have been the only one who wasn't like a big name star. Well, but
yeah, he was always kind of a novel.
King of the Cowboys that he met at the Wax Museum.
Roy Acuff's big time. Yeah.
Oh, he's big time, but again, like, well, thanks Jerry Reed for explaining who he is, because clearly you, I mean, and also Acuff's been dead for many years, so he was the host of the Grand Ole Opry, so anyone who knew music for that.
So who's Woody Strode?
Woody Strode? That's an ex-football player. That's a totally different actor, right?
Okay,
there.
The main guy, bad guy. Who
Woody,
played
Woody Stone? Claude Akins.
Claude Akins, and that does telegraph it a bit, because everyone else is playing themselves, and then you meet Claude Akins and he's not playing himself. I'm like, well, then he's the bad guy, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, we just play himself, like everyone else did.
And Claude Akins.
Ray Stevens, at this point, it had 4 top 10 adult contemporary hits, and including one that went number one.
Okay.
So he was huge at this point.
He was huge. Okay.
Now he's Cat Stevens' brother, right?
No.
No, he's Steve Stevens' brother. he's Ray Stevenson's cousin.
Oh, let's score this motherfucker.
But it was interesting seeing Nashville, from a much longer time ago.
Yeah, looks pretty much the same as it does now.
Sure does.
I'm ready to score.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's score.
All right. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
This one, I actually kind of enjoyed watching the movie. I did find Tom Selleck and Jerry Reed to be a really engaging pair. I mean, the story is probably way more convoluted than it actually needed to be for being so paper thin. But overall, it's TV schlock. And I think, as we've kind of established, that TV schlock just can't really measure up to full-on schlock. So I'm only going to go with a 6.
I'm going with a 5. I mean, it's running on the coattails of a whole lot of other stuff. But it was mildly enjoyable, but I don't think it was marketed as such. So, yeah, 5.
I think Stan kind of just summed it up really well, to the point where I'm gonna agree with everything he said, but give a lower score of 4.
I think that the 70s TV mystery is just a bit more prominent, because I visited my parents. My parents don't watch any television that was made in the past 20 years. So
they're like me.
20 actually would be an unusual. And so I watched a lot. I watched Columbo a lot when I was there. So this doesn't feel schlocky or anything. It feels I should send a DVD of this to my parents. They would probably enjoy this quite a lot. I did really enjoy enjoyed the film overall, and I enjoyed the two of them. I didn't know that Tom Selleck didn't do the regular series, so I went trying to see if there was, if you know, YouTube might have some of them or not, but I couldn't find any. But now that I know Tom Selleck wasn't in it, I don't care anymore. So I'm only giving this a 2.
Well,
more heart than budget.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, here we are with the TV movie that it doesn't look like the kind of thing that a lot of extra money went into, other than getting all the country music people to come in and sign autographs for Jerry Reed, basically. which is wonderful. Wonderful stuff. But yeah, I can't go high on this. It's 3.
I'm going to go a little higher just because I think there was just some little clever bits in there. And, you know, if they're... Everyone's trying, so yeah, I'll go as high as a 6.
Well, I suppose
that it might be. Sorry.
Well, I suppose if you count Jerry Reed being able to get an Excalibur as more heart than budget.
I mean, that looks like some early product placement, though, more than anything else, because they spend a lot of time explaining what an Excalibur is and how great it is and the features of an Excalibur.
That explains a lot, because I was thinking, what a weird car to have in this movie.
Is there a lot of people who are watching this show that could actually afford an Excalibur?
Well, think they grab a Cadillac or something like that, but no, they go with the Excalibur.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a competent TV movie. You don't have to give it much budget, but you just... It everything's fine. It had a director who's extremely well known. I'm going to look him up because I forget his name right now. But you know, it's
Kennedy.
Burt Kennedy. Thank you very much, Burt Kennedy, who had done Support Your Local Sheriff and your Support Your Local Gunfighter with movies like that were kind of popular in the early 70s. And yeah, so it really a successful guy. So, I mean, it's a very competent movie. It doesn't need a lot of budget for what it's doing. That means it has no action scenes and you're left just watching it bored most of the time. But, you know, 5, I think is a fair score.
It's a pilot, 2.
Your logic is sound.
What the fuck moments?
Well, you're not suggesting that we need to set up a babysitter or anything like that.
No, you could barely pop a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, it is really true. Like there are a lot of kind of what the fuck elements to it, but they're so. Like by the end of the movie, it's like where you think like, whoa, what the fuck did that happen for? But then by the end of the movie, it's just kind of become part of the general morass that is this movie. And so
awesome.
nothing really like winds up standing out at the end where it's just like, oh man, I can't believe that they had that. Like, I love the title cards, the chapter cards for everything. I thought that was, that was kind of hilarious, and that, yeah. And that they were like all
the,
like
they look like the Sting. They look like the chapter heading.
Yeah, yeah, Sting. Like almost like the Norman Rockwell style, and they're painted with like Tom Selleck and Jerry Reed and stuff like that. So I mean, it's some level of production quality in that regard. When you talk about the country music stars and the way it was, like, I think it was almost like one whole episode. Like if this was 2 40-minute episodes or something like that, then and it would have had to be more, but like. It was almost like one episode was all country stars in it, because the vast majority of them occurred within like a 15 to 20 minute period in this movie, other than of course Claude Akins as Woody Stone, but yeah, and them like just signing autographs and stuff like that, and just, but I love, you know, Barbara Mandrell actually being able to help out the detectives, like, but Tom Selleck made me laugh my freaking ass off, because I swear he just laughed his way through the entire movie. And him discovering the video camera in the private detective's bedroom was way more enjoyable for him than it actually should have been. He's just lying on the bed, laughing at himself, twirling his mustache, watching himself on TV, and I'm like, okay, this has gone on for like 5 minutes, and this really should have stopped by now. You're way more engaged in this than I am. So, I mean, there's little things, but they're not big things. So I'm only going to go with a 4.
Really? You didn't think them bathing together was worth it?
Nick, you're right. I'm adding 2 to my score. Because you're right. They are in a hot tub together, and it's implied that they're not wearing any clothes.
That's true. And they are like legs on top of each other and stuff like that. So that's
weird.
That's pretty weird.
And it's not, let's be clear, it's not an outdoor hot tub where that would actually seem less weird. It's an indoor hot tub. It's like a jetted tub that they're both in at the same time.
And I don't even think they realized that it was like, they never even called it a hot tub. They just called it the tub.
Yeah.
which actually does make it.
We were amazed by it when they ended up at this guy's house. By the way, we never even mentioned this character or his point with the plot at all. The characters whose house they're in. And let's not bother at this point.
the guy that they met at the bar?
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, in that same scene, you have Barbara Mandrell walking in on them in the bathtub
to hire
them for an investigation job in an apartment.
Yeah. Barbara Mandrell was not there.
Oh, sorry.
Morgan Fairchild the Wig.
Morgan Fairchild. Fairchild
the Wig. What? Wait. That was Morgan Fairchild?
It was. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big twist at the end. If you're not good at recognizing people from their faces, you got a face blindness.
Look, I did not think that was her because that would be so stupid. I never heard they'd be doing.
I looked at it and I'm like, is that Morgan Fairchild? All right.
I did, however, spend a goodly chunk of the movie going, why didn't they ever mention they were twins?
I just thought, oh man, when's she going to take off the wig?
They fooled me in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, there's some WDF here, man. I'm only going to go 4 because it's TV crap, but.
You got anything, Jack?
Yeah, I'm thinking about where to go with this because it is, it's like, it's honestly, there's certainly WTF, but it's essentially an hour-long sitcom. So, you know, like it's in that era where, you know, you kind of let stuff like that go a little bit. So it's a little bit tough to judge. I do think the sequence, it was like this Looney Tunes sequence in the middle where they're being chased by, I don't know, was he a security guard or something like that through a hotel, and they push him in the water and escape on a truck for no reason when they clearly have a massive lead over a man like twice their age, you know, to run away from, and he's just walking around pointing a gun at them in the middle of the day and in the sunshine. They just push him in the water. Like, the whole thing was so weird. I think it's a solid WTF, so it's a little hard to judge, but I'm going to give it a 6.
Very generous. Very generous WTF there.
Yeah, TPWTF.
I think the hot tub thing is the weirdest thing in the entire movie. If you've been to Nashville, there's an extra WTF though, because so they're at the Grand Ole Opry and they get in a kerfuffle with a guy that's following them. They manage to knock him in the pool and they jump onto the back of a dump truck, like a garbage truck. Yeah. And then there's an edit and they jump off of it in front of the Parthenon.
Yes.
If you've been to Nashville, you know those things are 35 minutes apart by driving.
One thing I will say is that there was a whole lot less traffic in there, Nashville.
there definitely was. Yeah, there was. Yeah, at no traffic. Yeah,
it was 1979. Yeah, maybe they lived there yet.
That's true. Maybe they were closer in 1979.
But yeah, yes, I definitely had a good laugh at that moment where it's just like, wow, they really hung onto the side of that garbage truck for a long time.
Yeah. I also I thought, how often does this garbage truck stop? That, you know, like, they just lucked into it. It's like, we pick up the stuff from the Opry and then we're done. We just
then we, well, go then, to the...
We'll go to the park.
We pick up the Opryland Hotel garbage, and we pick up the Parthenon garbage.
That's our route. Yeah. Just the top four things that show up on BuzzFeed as the things you need to see in Nashville. That's our whole route. Yeah. All right, I'm only going to go with a three, though. Memorable moments.
It's one of those cases where something might pop into my head, but I probably won't remember where it actually came from. I will remember the fact that Tom Selleck and Jerry Reed had a nice, likable chemistry. And if I see Barbara Mandrell in something, or Ray Stevens, I'm definitely going to, like, pop back into this. So I'll give it a few points, but I'll go four.
Previous to this, when's the last time that you had seen either one of those or something, by the way?
Oh, God. It was probably the 1980s when I was watching, a show like Columbo that would have been in Nashville that had, like, Barbara Mandrell in it or something like that. But so it's not going to happen often, but I would say that if it does...
But if it does...
Then I'm likely to remember that.
Gotcha.
All right.
This is my logic.
You basically said I'm going to remember this the next time I watch Ramblin' Man.
that's true.
Sorry, Nick. Go ahead.
No. Personally, after just the one viewing of this movie, I would give it like a two. But I mentioned this movie to my mother before. And without any explanation or jogging of her memory, she remembered it from the 70s. Now, my mom has never remembered a movie she's watched last night. So I have to say, there's probably something in the title that's worth sticking. So I'm going to go as high as a four.
You told me that story, and I was a little suspicious that she's remembering some entirely other movie.
Did she give
you any other details about it, or
she
just
said
like
cowboy? And she thought Quigley Down Under. Tom Selleck cowboy. And that's where she went.
No, she remembered the album, which is weird.
Are we sure there's an album? But let's move on.
Do you remember the song Jerry Reed? He made music, right? I'm willing to give her the benefit.
He definitely did.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's Jack's turn.
What are we judging? Memorable moments?
Memorable moments. You forgot we're doing a show. That's not a good sign.
Well, I can't even remember that we're remembering memorable moments. That's how unmemorable this movie is, too.
Yeah, I'm going to be... I think, strangely, the most memorable scene for me that I'm going to take away is at one point they need to sneak into someone's hotel room. And Tom Selleck takes a Band-Aid off Jerry Reed, puts it over the
stickiest Band-Aid in history. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like he does the thing that you would normally do with a piece of duct tape, which is like put it over the latch on a door so that the latch doesn't catch. And Jerry Reed says, "Where'd you learn that?" And Tom Selleck says, "Watergate."
My question on that one though is like, so they chose to do that as the maid left the room. So he does that when the maid is in the room. The maid leaves the room. Rather than actually waiting for the maid to go fully into the next room so that she's definitely not going to see, they wait until she's sort of got her back turned and then mad rush into the room.
I also thought that, like what you just did means that you don't have to rush. So why are you, like, it's like we're trying to catch the door before it latched or something. Like, but you solved this problem. like you just explained it.
That one moment there was like, wow, they could have eliminated that entire chase scene and all that stuff if they had just waited 5 fucking seconds longer.
All right, so I only gave that a two. Crazy concept.
Oh, I mean, it's a TV, so obviously it's limited. I mean, the entirety of the Morgan Fairchild is acting as her sister so that she can fake her own deaths, and then there's a blackmail scheme, and then there's three bad guys and all that stuff. I mean, the concept by itself seems pretty pretty crazy in and of a TV movie, so I'm going to go with a five. I'm going to be generous on this one.
No, I think they just showed whoever was, you know, providing the money of this like a cape of smoking the bat and said, "We want to do that, but cheaper." We got Jerry Reed.
He is.
Can we get a
cheaper
guy with a mustache?
And for the regular series, it gets recast by a guy with a similar mustache.
Well, like of course. I mean, because, you know, that was the reason. I bet you that was the reason why they cast it.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
100%. Guy with a mustache. So really right. Perfect for this season.
Sorry, Dick. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm...
By the way, I'm disappointed to see Simon and Simon didn't start till 1981, so this did not rip it off.
I know. Simon ripped this off, clearly. They're like, hey, remember Ramble Man? That should have been a hit. What if we had a guy with a mustache?
And his brother is just a little more uptight. Oh, man.
That mustache, we're gonna discover that guy, like guy plus mustache, that's comedy, that's the gold. That's yeah. Like the duo gold.
Well, of all the mustaches of the season and in history of cinema, I believe Tom Selleck deserves to be number one. I will say that.
That's why we got Ramble Man on the season, for sure.
That is great.
Nick, I'm sorry, did you finish?
He did not, but we digressed twice now.
Four.
All right.
Okay. Two, hurry up, Jim, so we can get to the doll.
I forgot if we're giving zeros.
Zeros is allowed, yes.
Zeros is allowed. Okay, one. what do I give exact, like the lowest score? But it's it is going to be rough going here for Ramblin' Man as we apply our secret modifiers. Every season we have six secret modifiers. This one has none.
Oh my god.
Which brings us to a final total of 37 out of 100, putting it in the bottom five of the Octagon, our ongoing record of all of the films we do in our search for the ultimate B movie. The Octagon. Pardon me?
What's bottom of the Octagon now? If this isn't it.
Bottom of the Octagon is Tales of the Mummy at 33. American Psycho 2 at 34.5. And this now ties with Jocks and Space Rage. It does boost poor the Great Rupert out of the bottom. it's the sixth from the bottom. So.
That's interesting because I would rather watch Concrete Cowboys Ramblin' Man than the Great Rupert.
Well, yeah. I can't watch any of those movies, honestly, and I never plan to watch this again.
Again, this is not a measure of objective quality.
Yes, that is for sure.
It's you want to cheer for it because I actually enjoyed this movie. I found they don't make TV like this anymore. They really should. I like this tour of Nashville, but is it Boogaloo? I don't think so.
It's an odd level of not Boogaloo, but yes, TV movie. And in the 70s, so like where everything was the same, and I think that's the problem, is that in the 70s there's so much that was exactly like this, just you know, when you add different people, you don't even have to add a different scenario half the time. It's just like instead of Tom Selleck and Jerry Reed, you can transpose whoever else into Nashville, and it's just like that fish out of water, like touring Nashville part. And yep, there you go. It's the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, well, this is like every. Go ahead. Let's wrap this up. I almost kept talking about Ramblin' Man. You're right. I'm wrong.
Yeah. Let's not ramble on about Ramblin' Man. We are done rambling.
Except look for the soundtrack.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Jerry Reed. Yeah, I mean, anything Jerry Reed's awesome. Okay. So let's go into chapter six, wrapping up the show. So please tell us where they can find us on the internet.
I had mentioned the Octagon, which is on wetalkpodcasts.com. That is our ongoing, it's a big chart. You can sort it by each of the five categories as well as the final total. And the links, hot links there to, they don't call them hot links anymore.
Hot links.
I'm so freaking old. there's links there to
all of the
hyperlinks to all of the other episodes, taking you to individual episodes. And we talk podcasts on Facebook. We talk podcasts on Twitter and on Instagram, Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Would one find those on the information highway?
That's right.
Superhighway. It's a superhighway.
It is on what's called the World Wide Web.
Series of tubes.
It is a series. That analogy was better than he gets credit for, honestly. I think there is an analogy for series of tubes that's fine.
And speaking of tubes, the 2B is where we watch the movie.
Right, 2B TV.
See, it all ties together. It's perfect. Well, season 7 of the...
Perfect might be a stretch.
It's perfect for this show.
All ties together, full stop. Yeah.
Season 7 moves along with the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo presenting free mustache rides. Next episode, which is our last episode of the season, and we are wrapping it up in style with the doll. I know everybody is excited to watch it and talk about it, so I don't even think it's worth going on with this episode at all anymore. So for Jim, for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadoo. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Wednesday, Jerry Reed and Tom Selleck are the Concrete Cowboys.
Okay, let her rip!
Two country drifters turn city detectives.
We're in Nashville, Tennessee!
To rescue a missing starlet in the home of country music. Someone's out to get the Concrete Cowboys on the Wednesday night movie at 9, 8 Central.